Welcome to the Planet Podcast, This Week in News in Tech. This is episode 17 of this little podcast, and today I have returning commentator Mark Million, the man who is made of money.
What's up, Patrick?
Not bad, man, not bad. I am today using the product demo unit of the Blue Microphone Yeti, and
you had that at CES, right?
Yes, I got that at CES, carried it back through customs, smuggling it through bags, being the little electronic mule that I was, and it's interesting. I'm warming up to it slowly.
I remember the guys at the NBC booth were geeking out hard over that one.
Yeah, it's a little bit I'm liking it. I like the features of it. I'm still kind of getting used to it because I'm not used to actually having a real microphone to work with when it comes to recording this podcast. I'm used to being ghetto fabulous and using the built-in microphone on my laptop.
Oh, I'm using the mic on my iPhone headphones.
That is awesome.
You and your
nice laptop, right?
It's a great laptop. I'm back to the old iPhone because I dropped my phone last night.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the Generation 1.
Nice. Got your silver body on that one.
Yeah, feeling old school.
All right, so today we're talking about tech. But before we really get into that, I want to make a request to any of the listeners. There was a recent tragic earthquake that happened in off the coast of Haiti, and it's basically destroyed the country right now. And if you want to help, the Red Cross has set up a system for donating $10, charging your cell phone carrier, by text messaging the word Haiti, it's spelled H-A-I-T-I, to number 90999. That's 90999. And what happens is it automatically will take $10 added to your bill of the month. And so far, the service has garnered in just a little bit over a week, $24 million from the last count from AT&T. That's roughly one-fifth of the total $115 million that the American Red Cross has raised so far for the Haiti Relief Fund. And I think there's actually a tech story out of this because the fact is $24 million was raised using cell phones.
It's pretty insane. I mean, it's a super convenient way to donate. Mm-hmm. But Hurricane Katrina, they raised $250,000 from text donations.
I think the one thing is that people are not used to, in America particularly, not used to paying using text messages. You know what I mean?
Well, right, yeah. The only services that have had any success with that are those late night, like, buy ringtones, get joke of the day.
It's like, get annoying frog.
Oh, God.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Headache incoming.
Yeah, but it's definitely interesting. The organization that was able to set this up was, one second, let me pull up their name from a WashingtonPost.com article. It was set up by, who was the organization? The Nonprofit Mobile Giving Foundation. And it's a coalition between all four major U.S. carriers, Verizon, T-Mobile, Sprint, and AT&T. And it's, you know, I think that you're going to start seeing a lot more of this in the United States now with people being able to easily donate. Supposedly some local NPR stations have also started doing similar things in the last year or so. So I think you're going to see more people having higher cell phone bills of their own choosing and not by that of the cell phone companies for once.
Yeah, I thought it was nice that Verizon and not Sprint, T-Mobile were saying off the bat that we're not, even if you don't have a texting fee, we're not going to take any fees from this. Mm-hmm. And AT&T was like, oh crap, yeah, we're not going to take fees either. Kind of lame that Sprint didn't revise their policy. They're still taking a cut, as far as I know.
I thought that it was AT&T was the one, because I remember hearing something about them getting bombasted by, you know, people saying that they were the ones who were like, oh, we have fees, and people were like, why are you charging fees?
Yeah, no, it was AT&T and Sprint for the first couple of days, and okay. Then AT&T responded, and Sprint, as far as I know, is still taking a cut from people who don't have texting plans.
Okay. Before we go into the next story, I just want to repeat the send a text message, HAITI, that's Haiti, to number 90999. Again, that is 90999 with the text message Haiti. And you can donate $10 off your cell phone bill to help the Red Cross in the relief efforts for Haiti. But talking about other international news, so Mark, what do you hear about this Great Wall of China issue and Google right now?
Great Firewall of China.
Uh-huh.
So Google, in a massive story and sort of a win for the Western world, is essentially giving an FU to China. Basically, they were cooperating with their government by censoring certain results. Like, you would Google Tiananmen Square in the Chinese Google search engine, and you would get, like, happy pictures of Tiananmen Square. And then you'd do it in any other Google territory search, and you have, you know, what it's historically known for, the Tiananmen Square massacre. And it was vague, but it seemed to be in response to this hack on Google's servers, they were being targeted. Google said we were being targeted by an exploit which appears to be coming from somewhere in China. And other high-profile American companies are being attacked. And it made them look great because the exploit was a security hole in Internet Explorer. So it's basically not only this whole big, like, oh, look at Google. We're a great, humble company that's fighting for freedom. But it's also, oh, you should probably go download Chrome, too, because Internet Explorer has plenty of problems.
What's interesting is that, again, it was, I think, a total of 30 U.S. companies were targeted by this hack, and the majority of them were targeted for information that might lead to dissidents of the Communist Party in China, particularly those who were human rights advocates. And that's, I think, one of the most scariest things is the fact that besides hacking into the cloud and basically making what is normal business for everyone not secure anymore for secure passwords and things like that, they are targeting people who are enemies of the great power, of the great, you know, the great Communist Party. And, I mean, the fact that Google's pulling out, I mean, it's interesting because Sergey Brin has made it well known that he's not particularly a fan of the fact that they went to China in the first place. And it was really published that it was... what's his name? The CEO.
Eric Schmidt.
Thank you. It was Eric Schmidt who really wanted to have them go into China. And so it's kind of an interesting, like, game that they have here because they're like, oh, we'll come to China. We'll do our thing. We'll be Google. Oh, but we can't. So we're going to put a little logo saying these search results are not shown completely. And after they did that, every other search engine started saying these search results are not complete because of Chinese rules. And so it's almost like, you know, the company didn't, like, the founders of the company didn't want to go in from the beginning, but they're kind of, like, changing the status quo slightly on how China forces people to, you know, protect their citizens.
Yeah, that was a nice PR spin, but, I mean, at the end of the day, they went into a communist country and they played by the government's rules, mm-hmm. which was to restrict the flow of free information. And, of course... Of course, I'm like halfway through the book Googled by Ken Auletta, and it's got some brilliant stuff in it, and it's a really good look into the company. So as I'm reading this story, I have these insights. Yes, of course, Eric Schmidt the premier businessman wanted to go into China, one of the biggest emerging internet markets, and establish themselves there. And of course, Sergey Brin, like the anti-businessman, like pro, like we don't care about ads. They didn't even want to put ads. They didn't want to hire a CEO at the beginning. And of course, he didn't want to go in for any business reasons. He was just morally opposed to it.
Well, I think it's also interesting because the fact is Sergey came from communist Russia. I mean, he came over not, you know, he wasn't born in the States. He was born in Russia, so he still has his accent slightly.
Right.
And it's interesting to think, you know, just people who come from, I think, a Soviet country, just kind of like, no, communism, not that great.
Not a fan.
Not a fan of entire systems of, you know, communist structure. Maybe slight socialism, but not much, not much. Just a tiny bit. But, okay, so in retort to that, another news article that came out of that was Google is postponing the release of the Android-made version of their operating system for China called Ophone in return to the fears of their cloud services now being hacked by the Chinese government.
I wonder if these two stories are somehow related.
Tit for tat. They somehow, you know, work together. It's like, you get hacked by China. Papa don't want to give you a toy now.
You also are threatened by the Chinese government of your search engine no longer working there. Mm-hmm. And when you build a mobile platform on top of a search engine, that tends to create problems.
Yeah, it's the article that I particularly got it from was the BBC has the article about the China mobile phones being pulled because of the fears of the censorship and also the hack. And that basically they were about to announce the phones and launch them in about another month from Samsung and Motorola, and they were going to be put onto China's Unicom service. And basically, what was it? They believe that some of the people's responses were that some people believe that this was mostly a thing, particularly because of the fact that the Gmail accounts that were hacked. Google, when they put their services in China, made sure that all of their private customer services like Google Docs, Google Gmail, and all that was on servers outside of China, but the search servers were in China. And the fact that they attacked U.S. servers that had the dissident emails is another thing about that. I mean, again, because, you know, you were saying how the Google phone Android ties into all those Google services. And it's pretty interesting, the outrage from people all over the world about this, particularly the human rights organizations.
Right. Well, if Google takes this stance that they're going to piss off the Chinese government and not care about the future of their search there and the future of their products, I mean, they're just going to flip a switch on the firewall and turn off everything Google. So what's the point of having a Google phone if you can't sync with Gmail, you can't sync your contacts, you can't search with the main search function? Mm-hmm. Voice search doesn't work because that needs to go through Google servers. I mean, it's essentially a dead phone.
Yeah, that's it's kind of interesting, the kind of like the growth of Chinese telecom, though, is because Huawei, I think that's how you pronounce the name, correct?
No idea.
It's this Chinese company that makes a lot of electronics. They're actually producing the world's majority of telecom routers, like telecom infrastructure level routers, and basically they're kind of pirated Cisco routers. And right now, majority of Asia is purchasing all these routers, as well as Africa right now, for its expansion. Because basically, it's the same enterprise and backbone level routers, but for like, 1/18th the cost. But the thing, what's funny is that because these are, you know, black marketed, there was an entire story a while ago about how the Department of Defense ordered these Cisco routers that were made in China. But they got an extra couple pallets of these routers, and it turns out a couple of these routers had little holes in them, particularly these little hardware-level encryption chips that allowed them to dial back out to China. And so it's kind of scary, because if you think about it, in the next couple of years, if the entire telecom industry is powered in the foreign countries, like the third world countries, is powered by China, I could just imagine someone in China saying, release the firewall and press one button, and all of a sudden you see these iron curtains come up around everyone's internet connections.
Yeah, I mean, that's a scary thought.
But scary thoughts aside, let's go back to American issues, particularly that of cell phone companies. What's this article out of Apple Insider that you brought up?
Yeah, so there's a very nice pissing match between AT&T and Verizon this past week over a pricing war. So Verizon announced they're dropping the prices on some of their monthly calling plans, and within 2 hours, I get an email from AT&T. We just dropped our prices. Check this out. And I like T-Mobile's response is, we just lowered the prices on some of our best phones. So if nothing else, this goes to show that competition is nice. I'm not exactly sure why Verizon felt compelled to lower their prices when they're finally getting good phones and they're like pretty much universally renowned as the best service in the U.S. But it's good for the consumer.
I think there was a particular comment about the Verizon price drops I remember reading. It was about like how now users have to default to if they have any smartphone whatsoever, or if it's a feature plus phone, that's any phone that can get internet access but not necessarily have like apps and stuff like that, like normal like smartphones have, you have to have the internet connection though. So it's basically, I think they're trying to build an infrastructure where everyone has to have data eventually. Like they have the one cheap plan, which is the $30 a month, or is it, I think it was like, what are the exact plans? I'm trying to remember. I remember seeing the article on Engadget.
I mean, that's still a ways out, right? Requiring everyone to have a data plan?
It's for the smartphones, all of them have to have a data plan. It's if you have a smartphone on the surface, you have
to have it. But why would you buy a smartphone if you don't plan to have a data plan?
There's Wi-Fi.
Hey, you just bought an iPod Touch.
Wi-Fi. But yeah, I think it's definitely interesting. The price wars hopefully will get to the point where a data plan will be $50 a month with phone service at the cheapest rate. I think once you get there, you're going to see everyone have data plans then.
Yeah, I mean, there's also a value there once they enable tethering. I could see a lot of people just eliminating their home internet. Anyone who's not gaming or BitTorrenting has really no reason to have a separate home internet if they can just tether to their computer.
I think the one cool thing is Verizon made it very well known that they want to have a lot of the new Droid phones that are coming out after the Droid to actually act as MiFi kind of style pocket routers. And they want to try to do some sort of like low performance mode where it's just basically acting as a modem to Wi-Fi hotspot. And so I think you're going to be seeing a lot of that coming out of Verizon, so you can use all your other devices on their service.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Talking about cell phones, Apple has been in a nice little war with Nokia for the last year and a half about, you know, patents this and patents that, and how Nokia is stealing Apple's patents and Nokia is saying that Apple's stealing their patents. Well, Apple has just fired a major salvo at Nokia by requesting the U.S. Ban all imports of Nokia phones. That is finally gotten to the point where the kids have stopped slapping each other and Apple straight out slugged them.
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
If anyone remembers, I think it was Panasonic and I think it was, there was some TV companies recently, a couple years ago, that had the same issue. And then also Nokia went against Qualcomm when it came to their chipsets about world phones for the same issue. And basically, if you ban a product in the United States, you basically kill the company in the United States entirely.
Well, that's not really true. I mean, Nokia doesn't have much of a presence here anyway. That's why this is so confusing to me, that Nokia is already kind of dwindling in this country. Why even bother with this?
I don't know, because it's Nokia, and everyone remembers their phones as a child. They were so great.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Nokia is the biggest carrier in every other part of the world. I mean, it's just here that they've fallen off. I don't really understand this move on Apple's part.
I think it's mostly just a pick up dung and throw it in the face kind of tactic from Apple saying, you know what, F you.
Yeah, I guess.
But I think it's, I think when you get to these kind of dirty, like, not necessarily dirty, but these kind of, like, rough and tough fights between two different large companies where it's like, it's all about squabbling at first, and now it's like, I will ruin you in so many levels. But getting away from Apple being mean and trying to destroy other companies, what are they trying to create?
They are trying to create a tablet.
Oh, snap.
I just unveiled it. There you go. I'm breaking news.
Oh, snap. This is official? Who's your source? Are you the source? Oh, my.
I have a source inside of Apple, which is inside of Microsoft, which is also inside of Nokia.
So it is a riddle trapped inside of Enigma, inside of a question.
I've heard, as everybody else in this entire world, from a source close to Apple, that there is indeed a tablet, and we will indeed see it on the 29th. But who cares? Everybody knows it's coming. Did I say the 29th? I meant the 27th.
Yeah, 27th.
So they have their announcement in San Francisco on the 27th. And as is the case for any Apple announcement leading up to it, we have a slew of rumors. One was kind of aligned with the New York Times. It was leaked by the Post that they are about to put up a paywall. So in order to access certain content or... I think the thought is that they're going to do metered content. So in order to access their content, you'll need to pay a subscription fee. And they think this will coincide with the tablet, where you're subscribing and getting your New York Times in tablet form, like the newspaper tablet, and you're also getting the subscription to the website content. So that's one rumor.
Mm-hmm. What are the other ones? Tell us more.
We've got the Wall Street Journal, which has already confirmed the tablet rumor, so that makes it like 95% going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Them reporting that HarperCollins, this publisher, is in talks with Apple about getting their books on the iTunes store on a tablet.
Mm.
And finally, we have Gawker offering, what was it, $100,000 if they get to play with the tablet for an hour, or like $10,000 for pictures of it. And there's this question of whether them doing this scavenger hunt is illegal, and it was all negated when Apple sent them a cease and desist notice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Apple and those filing of suits and cease and desists.
Mm. So I will be in San Francisco on the 27th at this announcement. And we're going to more than likely see a new tablet and something about the new phone.
Yeah, I heard that they're also going to have they're going to release iPhone OS 4.0 at the big major release that I'm not going to be able to make.
And, right, that's probably all we're going to be seeing there. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if they'll actually show the hardware.
Do you know if there's any other rumors about what kind of features iPhone OS 4 will have? Like, have you heard anything through the grapevine?
Not really. You know, I was reading that thing on Boy Genius Report. Did you see that?
No. What was that about?
They're usually pretty reliable with especially Apple rumors. He is a pretty good source in there.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know, I'll just go down the bullet points.
Okay.
There will be multi-touch gestures OS-wide, which would make sense for that as the rumored OS for the iTablet.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently it's being called the iTablet within Apple, not the iSlate.
Okay.
So what else do we got? Background applications, multitasking, graphical and user interface changes to make navigating through the OS easier and more efficient. The update will be compatible with the iPhone 3G and 3GS, not my brand new, brand old metal back iPhone, which will, according to the Boy Genius's source, quote, put them ahead in the smartphone market because it will make them more like full-fledged computers.
Mm-hmm. Which means, I'm guessing, I also see here, background multitasking.
Yes. Background apps, multitask.
That'll be good. That'll be good.
Yeah, I mean, I've played with the 3GS a little bit. I've never actually owned one, but it's fast enough. Like, I don't... From a user interface standpoint, I don't know if I'm really going to get much from the idea of multitasking. I've used a Droid. I was testing a Droid for like 2 or 3 weeks, and I tested the MyTouch way back when, and I never really used the multitasking feature because it's like a random palette of apps. You hold down the home menu, and then it just pops up like here are the most recent whatever apps.
I think the one thing particularly with the multitasking that's nice is, say for example, if I wanted to listen to Pandora, which is a great music service, if I by accidentally were to click out of Pandora, I no longer have that music playing, and I have to start all the way from the beginning.
Yep. Yeah, you're right. Yep. That would be nice. I just never used Pandora on the phone because it sucked. But I remember when I had a Droid that I was listening to Pandora because I could actually use it like an iPod and do other things at the same time.
Yeah, I could also imagine, like, say, driving applications, like GPS applications, that would be like, oh, you have a phone call. Yeah, hello, what's up, guys? And then you could go right back to the app.
Yeah. Yeah, or you could also be text messaging while you're driving and have your GPS being read to you in the background, which is completely illegal, but there you go.
Yeah, that sounds great. But talking about other Apple news, Kodak, the company who everyone has thought has been dead, except for their lovely little ZI-8 camera, which has become its own little cult following on the internet, Kodak has filed patent lawsuits against Apple and RIM, the makers of the BlackBerry, particularly for when it comes to patents infringement related to imaging processing techniques for mobile applications. Kodak, I think that's the only way they're trying to make money right now is lawsuits.
Yeah, I mean, they got nothing to lose. They're not in the phone business. I'm guessing there's probably nothing that Apple or RIM could get them for, unless Apple has some type of, like, using your finger to operate a user interface patent, which, you know, they probably do have. But, yeah, why not? Kodak doesn't have really any good money makers right now.
Besides that lovely, lovely little pocket camera that can kick the Flip Minnow's butt, I personally think.
Yeah, I just recommended that to someone today looking to get into amateur video. It's a good device, but I mean that market is kind of like going away. It's all the video stuff is starting to get better in phones.
Well, I think the one thing with is that sometimes having a dedicated device, like you can't bring a phone into some services and stuff like that, and like if you need something to record on, the quality you're not getting 1080p yet on even the Droid. The Droid gets like 480p, but it doesn't get like 1080p and then have the microphone input and stuff like that. Like I did see some things at CES where a guy had an iPhone 3GS hooked up to a weird looking plastic case that then allowed him to have a light and then also had a Sennheiser wireless lapel mic connected to it too.
That's pretty ridiculous.
I know, like he had it plugged into the microphone jack and then had the person who was on, you know, talking have a microphone that was wireless hooked up to this little, you know, like, you know the Sennheiser wired mic packs, right?
Yeah.
It was just hanging around top, like on this little stand that's on part of the thing. And I was like, and then he had a wide angle lens attachment for it as well.
Yeah. I mean, there were so many absurd geeky setups that I saw. Like there was some dude walking around Digital Experience with an iPhone attached to his baseball cap, and he was also carrying like an HD camera in his hand, like a backpack with like batteries or, like, I don't know, Kool-Aid in it.
I know those people.
You would.
Yes, those are the people from mp3car.com.
MP3 car?
MP3 car, yeah.
I just had to laugh when
they are really good people, and surprisingly it worked. They were streaming over Ustream with it.
That's pretty intense. I'm surprised they got service on the iPhone. I tried to do a little streaming, and I had no luck with AT&T.
All right, so what we got here for you? We got a story about Facebook glitches and DNS issues. What's up with this?
Oh, this was insane. Some like woman from I don't know, Montana or something. I don't have the story in front of
Georgia.
Me.
Georgia, sir. Georgia. I have the story right in front of me.
All right.
You know your story.
I'm not doing my job. Woman from Georgia pulls up her phone and types in facebook.com and I'm logged in already. I didn't even think I logged in on my phone. Scroll down and this isn't my profile. Who are these people? She's got direct access to someone else's profile. Pulls up her phone later. Was it her sister-in-law's phone? And she has direct access to someone else's profile. I didn't even know this was possible. A network glitch that your account information goes to someone else's device?
Well, it seems like from reading this article, it was happening only on mobile phones. So it could have been something where it's like particularly mobile versions of the service. You know, when it comes to the carrier, it might be like caching the information. Doesn't go into full detail. Like, they're not explaining exactly how they're able to do this for the sake of AT&T security, because this was over, it says AT&T's service.
Yeah, it goes into very little detail, but just that very idea, it didn't really seem likely to me. It just seemed like, shouldn't the infrastructure know better?
You assume that the structure is intelligent.
Fair enough.
Facebook became aware in 2010.
No, I mean, this sounds to me like an AT&T fault, no?
Yeah, this has definitely got to be on AT&T's fault, particularly with mobile storage of information. They're saying that it could have been with the encryption process for HTTPS versus HTTP, it says here. So, AT&T, another way to fail.
They're not getting too much good press.
No, they're not. They are absolutely not. But to go away from AT&T, a company that really failed off the wagon on this one, high-end electronics company Lexicon, who makes a $3,500 DVD Blu-ray player, just got caught in the worst possible way. Basically, out of an article from The Consumerist, which is linked out from an article on Audioholics.com, the Lexicon BD30 Blu-ray player, which retails for $3,500, turns out to be actually, internally, all the same parts and all the same layout of the Oppo BDP83, which is a $500 Blu-ray player. If you go to the links on consumerist.com's website, which I'll provide in the show notes, as well as to the Audioholics website, it is pretty damning. They have pictures of the layout. Here, let me send you the link to it right here, Mark, for the Audioholics one through the Skype message. There you go. I know, it sounds like Alpo dog food. But if you look at the layout, they're the exact same boards for the circuitry boards and the exact same drive bays and stuff like that for on this thing. And
oh, it's the same place.
And that is the best ODM I've ever seen in markups.
Well, if you're going to pay for the name, I don't think anybody... I don't think the user would be able to tell the difference. Throwing that out there.
I mean, like, what's funny is they said, was there any differences in software? No, they're the exact same menu layout.
I mean, who needs to buy a $3,500 Blu-ray player?
Hey, you know what? There are some rich people out there who want to spend their money and not provide services for the poor and weak and disenfranchised, and they want to spend that money how they want to spend it, darn it.
Right, so they're not going to know any better anyway. They'll get the Alpo dog food Blu-ray player, and everything will look the same, and they'll think it's fine.
To China, it will go. It's like, your $3,500, oh, sorry, $3,000 to China.
So, all right, another story that sounds like a dog word.
Yes.
We got Yelp, which is about to add check-in to its iPhone app.
It's not about, sir. It is, and I used it last night, and it was good.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't see an update for...
The update just came out just 2 days ago.
Thought I checked.
It doesn't like you.
So at the bottom, it will say... Wait, is this just for the GS, maybe?
It worked on my my iPod Touch for Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I don't know why I didn't get it. So anyway,
yeah.
Yelp joins the Foursquare Gowalla race and adds location-based social network check-in to its iPhone app. So you can be at a location, at a bar, at a restaurant, check in from the app, do a little shout to your friends, and if you know what Foursquare is, it's basically the same thing.
Yes, I actually just signed up for Foursquare just 2 days ago.
Yeah, I got your friend request.
I know. I do not have a smartphone capable of properly doing Foursquare, so I downloaded an app called Foursquare X for the Macintosh laptop. And it uses the Wi-Fi triangulation stuff to let me log in and check in.
Yeah, I heard that was good.
Yeah, it works really well. But, yeah, talking about Yelp. Late to the game, or do you think they might be able to make it?
I don't personally know anybody that has a Yelp account.
Really?
I already have a lot of friends who use Foursquare. Mm-hmm. I think the barrier to entry to using Yelp is pretty high. At least it was. You would have to, like, be obligated to write reviews. Mm-hmm. And there was no really use beyond that. I mean, now you can check in and it's easy and there's not like a big barrier to entry, but I don't know if that will convince people to sign up for accounts. I mean, I it's not going to necessarily make me use Foursquare any less.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, But I do have Yelp on the front page of my home screen, and Foursquare is on the second page.
Yeah, to let you know, though, if you want to know someone who actually has a Yelp account and writes reviews, I do.
All right. I have a Yelp account. I've only written a review of my mechanic because he asked me to, and he's a good mechanic.
That's nice of you. But talking about other things, the German government... recently asked its citizens to stop using Internet Explorer.
Very nice.
Thank you. I know I try. The German government, in this article from Mashable, the social media guide, says they asked them to stop using the Internet Explorer because of the implications of the Chinese security attacks on...
Yeah, you just turned Chinese out of nowhere.
I did? Yeah. I'm not used to wearing monitored headphones lately, so it's like I'm used to hearing my own voice, and the monitor just throws me off.
Oh yeah, that
I'm turning into Leo Laporte with his bad accents.
Yeah, I mean it started out good, and I want to throw that out there.
Oh, thank you.
Started out well, then it kind of fell apart.
I know. Darn. Okay, so yeah, basically the German government has made it official, stating that they wish everyone to stop using the IE, if I say that enough times. And everyone to use specifically Firefox for a more secure browsing environment. Way to go, yeah. Germany.
GE. Yeah, I'm with the Germans.
I know. Germans are rocking it out, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know why people are still using Internet Explorer. I wouldn't necessarily relegate that you have to use Firefox. I mean, I like Chrome on PC and Mac.
I'm not entirely converted to Chrome yet because the extensions are not quite there yet. There are a lot of extensions I use religiously on Firefox, particularly One called, what was it called again? Damn it. Image. Oh, bloody hell, gotta pull it up.
The extensions on Chrome are definitely less powerful. Like, they have less access to the main software. They're more like web apps.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some sweet extensions.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree that they've gotten some of the some nice ones starting to go now. Like, they have the extensions that are everyone needs. The AdBlocker Plus are
poof is that one.
Oh, I love that one. It's like, oh, wait a minute. I don't want that ad or anything related to it ever. Shift Apple K for kill. And you can then highlight the actual ad, and it will find any ad in the future that has its tags of information from its meta information because of, you know, Cascade or the Creative Style Sheets, and it'll block it permanently.
The new Dig extension that came out for Chrome today is pretty good.
I have not looked at it yet. What's it do differently?
It's just as you're browsing the web, it pops up a little icon with the number of digs if the story's already dug, and then you click it, you dig right there without having to go to the site. And if you're a dig user, it's pretty much a must-have.
Okay. I will try that in the Chromium download I have right now. I think the one thing I really wish they had is the Firefox extension FlashGot, and that is my personal favorite. It works with my personal download, like file downloaders of choice, so that's one.
Oh, for downloading movies from YouTube or something?
No, I didn't say that. I didn't say that at all.
For downloading Flash videos that you own and have the legal copyrights to.
I never said downloading any such thing. I said because I like to automate my downloading process for copious amounts of legal files I download. Legal. That's the key word. It's legal. All right, so I'm going to do one final story for the day. We have a funny story out of Hackaday. Some lovely people out of, I have no clue where, decided to
take... When in doubt, always go with Montana.
Montana. Yes, Montana will be the no-name state forever. It is some lovely little hackers who are hardware hackers decided that they love their Linksys WRT54GL, which is the Linux special edition of the Linksys router, so much that they wanted to expand upon it and give it its proper home in a custom-built Lego case.
Sweet.
The link you can see right now in the podcast with the enhanced podcast feed, you can see this lovely case. If I had the possibility of playing Girl from Ipanema, I would right now, because this case could be yours for the lovely work of, I have no clue how long, but, they designed the case using, the Lego CAD software to fit around the actual board, and it looks pretty darn pretty.
So you were big into Legos, I'm assuming?
I love me some Legos. Ooh.
Yeah, I had a ton of Legos, but... One of my friends had Kinects. That's like biggest crap ever.
Yeah, I got the Kinects. Which one? I got the Kinects Ferris wheel one time for Christmas, just for, you know, for giggles to see if I could do it. Did it, and that thing is a pain in the butt to put together because they connect, and then you get a blood blister because your finger gets caught between the two parts, and you're like, not fun.
It's just kind of a letdown. Not enough imagination involved in Kinects.
I have to say, Kinects, though, is slightly better than Megaloblox, if you remember those.
I don't think I had any of those.
Megaloblox were, like, the cheap knockoff version of Legos that were, like, slightly large. Like, they were a slightly different size so that you couldn't connect them together to Lego blocks. But they looked exactly the same.
That's depressing.
I know. And, like... Supposedly they had a whole huge, like, branding thing a couple years ago where they were, like, getting Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and stuff like that and all these other, like, third-rate knockoff, like, TV shows and stuff like that to be like, we'll have special kits for Ninja Turtles and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, Lego's got Star Wars and Batman. No.
You know what got me started on Legos, I think, was Lincoln Logs. I should get my nephews Lincoln Logs.
I still say Legos. They have those huge, giant Lego blocks. I still have that Lego donkey? I don't know what the hell that was. Do you remember that thing?
Lego donkey.
It was like that carrying around case for your really fat, big, giant, like, two-year-old Legos, the ones that are the size of your, like, baby fist.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It was like a red box-looking thing with, like, a black face and a yellow eye and a white center in it.
Sounds good. Maybe I'll get that for my nephew. They have those Lego stores now in the mall.
I know. Lucky bastard children. Pardon my language there, but children today are too lucky.
Whatever, you got the uncensored tag in the podcast, right?
I have the explicit. There's an explicit tag. Yeah. And I know, you can't say anything because of your limitations in your language.
Oh!
Yes, people, the news is now out. He cannot curse on this podcast because of his own work ethics.
Hey, mainstream media!
So we'll end this little rant on today's podcast. Thank you, Mark, for being on today, the man of $1 million.
Thank you. It was fun.
Where can we find more of your work?
LATimes.com/tech, and the LA Times is launching a new mobile-focused blog at LATimes.com/go.
Oh, my. I will make sure to go to that.
You should go.
Yes, because...
And Haiti. Also Haiti. Some Haiti.
And, yes, all listeners, remember to text the word Haiti, that is Haiti, to number 90999. Again, that is 90999. The word Haiti, to send $10 that will be billed to your cell phone service to help the Red Cross in helping the people in Haiti. And then to say again, thanks, Mark, for being on the show. I am Patrick Roanhouse. Have a good day, everyone.